Welcome to the Unapologetics Podcast. We're here, we are unapologetically Black, unapologetically Christian, and unapologetically me, with no apologies. Hey, y'all. It feels so good to be back for another episode. Yo, I was recording previous takes of this portion of the podcast, the introduction, and I kept mistakenly saying this is episode 4. I'm like, wait a minute. No, this is actually episode 5. We've already done 3 episodes that gives us the structure for how other episodes will come your way. And then we took like this, I don't want to say a detour, like a pit stop. Like we pulled up to the gas station to fill up, whether we were filling up the tank or filling up our bellies with, you know, the convenient snacks and drinks. Just in case you don't know who's talking to you right now, my name is Malachi A. Scribe. That's spelled A plus sign scribe. The plus sign is silent. And to give you context for the structure of this season 3 of this podcast, the In Theory series comprises of 3 mini series. We got CNC, which is Conviction and Conversation. We got R&R, which is Reading and Righteousness, and we got the TNT, Theory and Theology. Now, this episode, this Conviction and Conversation installment, I'm calling this Bloods and Crits. Crits spelled C-R-T-S, like critical race theorists. A lot of times that's what they'll call themselves, or other people may call them crits. You feel me? Bloods, meaning like, I mean, you could think of this as a reference to gang culture, or also a reference to the core belief of Christianity, you know, via the blood sacrifice of the Son of God, Jesus Christ, God incarnate. You feel me? It seems as if there is this composed contention, if you will, or opposition between these two groups, if we're going to call them something like that, like if we're going to have like two sides of a supposed argument. We'll get into more of that later with a wonderful guest that I'll have here on this episode to help me talk about this. The reason why we start with the Conviction and Conversation is like, okay, I don't want to be the only one with an idea or with a theory about about the theory. I don't want to be the only one in conversation. I don't want to be talking to myself on these episodes. Of course, like for the Reading and Righteousness, I'll have authors that I'll talk with. In the Theory and Theology conversations, I'll talk with theologians or subject matter experts. But I think it's important that I'm talking like not just to people on pulpits and platforms, but people across the aisle. It'll be a little bit of both in this episode. Like I'll talk with friends, one who just so happens to be a pastor and one who is in a pastoral position, but not on the same kind of platform. So I think it's important that all of us are having this discussion in community with one another, like bringing everybody to the table. And even eventually down the line, I hope to do an episode where I talk to people, where I will talk to people who may actually disagree with some of the points that we're going to be bringing up all throughout this season and all the mini series that follow. Let me do something real quick. I haven't done this in a minute. Let me give you the Black story behind all this. You know, the Black story, it's like a backstory, but it's Black. You feel me? Almost 3 years ago, it's 2020, we're in the thick of it. Protests are happening left and right. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, right? One particular person that I've had like the most debates and arguments about critical race theory and the gospel with, this is kind of tough to talk about because like I have to talk, like I won't get into this right now, but essentially I lost a friend or someone who I thought was a friend, and not because of, thankfully, not necessarily because of like this argument, but eventually it got to the point where I didn't feel safe in this form of the relationship, because not because of what we were arguing, but because of what this person allowed other people to say to me and say about me that was like culturally and personally disrespectful. This is not the time and space for that portion of this narrative, but I just wanted to give you context as to like why it's so important for us to have these discussions, because over and over again, I was put into a position to have to defend Black community, for the most part, our collective thought, and our when it comes to our cultural values and our ideas of justice, because often I was made out to be a thought leader who, in Christian spaces, was convinced that I had to pledge loyalty to only one group of people, and that being those who believe in Jesus like I do. And don't get me wrong, yes, like they are family to me. Like any person who believes in Jesus Christ, like by the blood of Christ, we fam. But at the same time, although this person was saying like, oh, your loyalty is to, what am I trying to say? Like, it was like this weird notion that a lot of Black people like myself have to wrestle with as believers, is do we have to choose between our Christian brothers and sisters in Christianity in the church and our Black brothers and sisters in our community? Like, this person literally said to me that he saw me expressing my frustrations with white Christians publicly, and he categorized them as siblings that I have more in common with than Black brothers who aren't brothers in Christ. And I was so like disheartened to hear that, and so disappointed to hear that, because I'm thinking to myself, like, why should I have to choose? Especially if the goal is the gospel, giving people the gospel and helping usher them into the body of Christ. If that's the goal, I shouldn't be seeing another Black person as someone who has perpetual enmity with myself in favor of those who are like-minded in Christ, and coming with the risk of there may be some people who are like-minded in Christ who seek to preserve systems that destroy that same Black brother who may or may not be in Christ, or who is on their way into the knowledge of Christ. Loyalty is not the conversation I'm trying to have. Loyalty should not be the conversation that we're trying to have. The conversation we should be trying to have is, how do we be good neighbors? That's what brings us to this conversation today. And on top of that, in that same argument that he and I was having, he mentioned critical theory and was saying basically that the answer of the social justice matters is not critical theory, but instead like is Christ himself as our righteousness. And I'm like, yes, I agree. Christ is the answer. Christ is all in all. But what if Christ is telling us that there are certain tools that we need to use on his behalf to dismantle systems that never should have been in place. Like, yes, Christ is coming to return, and that's the end-all be-all right there. But what is he actually going to end? He's going to end all of these man-made constructions and systems that we've built up and have prided ourselves on and have built riches on and comfort for ourselves at the expense of others. All of those things are coming down one day. Whether it's today, tomorrow, years, or maybe even centuries from now. But it's not a part of God's design. That's not where God's heart is for his people, which is everybody. Everyone is a child of God. Everyone is made in his image. So, okay, that hopefully that wasn't too long. I just want to give y'all context for this conversation today. Bloods and Crits. I have two wonderful guests with me, friends of mine that I've gotten to know over the years, and I love hearing their thoughts. I love speaking about these things in conversation with individuals like them. I got my man Dylan Bowen and Pastor Colby Hill, and I'll introduce them a little bit more officially here in the next segment. So let's get it cricket cracking. Or should I say, let's get it bracken. Get it Bloods and Crits. All right, let's get it. Thank you all for thank to both of you for joining me after like who knows however many minutes of struggle, but we struggled forward. You know, that's what this is all about. In this fight for social justice in the name of Jesus and in the gospel, the struggle forward. You know, it says in the book of Hebrews, can I preach? For the joy that was set before him, Christ endured the cross. Hey. At church yesterday. But yeah. Okay, so we got on the microphone in our respective home studio spaces. Y'all can't see the video, but on my like direct left, we got Dylan Bowen, and I do know how to pronounce his last name. We had some trouble with that. I thought I had some trouble with that earlier, but actually I've been saying it correctly. Just to check back in with you, Debo, you're still a chaplain at a hospital, right?
Correct. Yeah, Ascension St. Vincent on 86th Street in Indianapolis.
Okay, cool. And how long have you been doing that now at this point?
The shortest answer is that I've been working with them in some capacity for a little over 6 years at this point. I've been primarily focused at 86th Street for a little over 2.5 years at this point. So full-time work last 2.5 years going on. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it'll be 3 in August. Yeah. So 2.5 years,
man, bless you. Cause like that's a lot. Like, you know, some people are doing pastoral cares in, you know, the expected capacities of church buildings and whatnot. But to also like do that out there, essentially like in the street, you know what I'm saying? Like, meeting all kinds of people, as well in this space. But especially like, and given some of the stories you shared with me, like some people are like literally on their deathbeds. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mm-hmm. especially during this, time of like, you know, we're still kind of in this pandemic and whatnot, but, shout outs to you for, you know, submitting yourself to that kind of care for people.
Thank you.
That's what's up. And then to my like catty corner diagonal left. You took your head, squint your eyes. We got Pastor Colby Hill.
Now, last time, this was like right after you transitioned to the new church that you're at. You're right. Let me make sure I get this right. At the moment, you are at Real Church. That's what it's called, right?
Correct.
And this is in, go ahead. Waldorf, right outside of DC.
Yep. Waldorf, Maryland.
All right. Good. Yeah, and like, oh shoot, man. Like now it's been like almost 2 years, right?
Yeah. When we last connected on the podcast, I think it was in the midst of COVID, or maybe we had just come out of lockdown. I can't quite remember.
Yeah. Wow, that's wild. So like it's been like the same ish amount of time for the both of y'all, like transitioning into these new spaces, and like now here it is. Like so for both of y'all, what does it feel like now to be here in your new positions or in these new spaces?
I mean, I'm doing what I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to lead a church plant. And so I'm doing what I feel like I'm called to do. But COVID kind of served as an opportunity for people to take big risks in their career. For some people, it was an on-ramp to something new. For some folks, it was an off-ramp to something that they had been doing. Mm. So right. It was a little bit of both for me.
Indeed. And what about you, Dylan?
I'd say it's been definitely a bit of, for me, it felt like an on-ramp at first, because I spent the longest time just trying to land a full-time hospital chaplaincy gig. You know, it's very niche, but the market over here in Indianapolis is very oversaturated with qualified chaplains, but very few jobs. So I was very excited to make that transition, but I did so in the peak of the pandemic. It was August of 2020 at the time. And I definitely wanted to definitely get on an off ramp a couple of times there, not going to lie. So it's definitely been a mixed bag, but by and large, it's where I also feel called to be. I get to spend a lot more time with people than I did before when I was working in church settings. And in some cases it's a little bit more of also a stable income too, in some regards, but, it's been a blessing for the most part, but I think also with a lot of, you know, God's blessings, they also doesn't mean that everything is always, you know, smooth or hunky dory the entire time either. So, which is to be expected. So, so before I ramble on any more, I'd say it's definitely been a mixed bag, but I'd say the net goal was more positive than negative overall, I think. That's that good. Makes sense.
Oh, it's yeah.
Clear as mud.
Yes, indeed. I appreciate both of y'all sharing that and both of y'all like being transparent in that. I feel like people look at those who are in like pastoral positions and, you know, they put them on. Y'all know how it goes. Like they put people on pedestals and think that, you know, everything is easy for them. Everything is going so well, blessings on blessings, and that they don't struggle with anything, like at all, ever. And that's really not the case.
No.
Yeah.
I'd like to know who those people are and what church they're at. And
right. Right.
It has not been my experience or reality.
So. Right. Right. So, real quick, just to give you context, just in case, you know, I ain't gonna front like y'all have listened through every single episode of this podcast. But just to give you context for this season, and you know, it's cool, Pastor Kobe, that I had your professor on like two episodes ago, and now here you are.
And then yeah, Dylan, thanks for the go other ahead. Way around next time. Put me on before my professor.
No, it's cool, because like this is whatever you say today would just be a summation of the things that he's taught. You know, say you are his legacy. You feel me? So shout outs to Pastor. I mean, not Pastor. Well, he might be, I don't know. I don't know if he's a pastor, but Professor Joseph.
I think he's also an ordained minister or something. Yeah.
Okay. So like I feel like he's just constantly like stacking these like not surnames. What do you call them? Prefixes and suffixes, I guess. But yeah, Professor Joseph L. Tucker Edmonds. Yeah, it's such a pleasure to have him on. So just to give y'all a further context for this season, we're talking about critical race theory. The theme is called In Theory. And you know, like how people say that in phrases, like when, especially like if they're like kind of sure that something will work, but there's always like that slight percentage of that chance where it's like, you know, there's room for error, but I'm pretty sure about this. So like in theory, this could work. Yeah. So it's like that, but I think a little bit differently, it does like play on perhaps some people's doubts about and misgivings about critical race theory, or CRT people call it, and whether or not it has like compatibility with Christianity or the gospel. But we essentially, in theory, we are tackling that core question. And so each episode has been either a conviction in conversation, which is what we're doing for this episode, you know, just bringing in people that I know, correspondents, friends, what have you, to just talk about a particular sub topic within this. The episode with Joseph L. Tucker Edmonds was a theory and theology episode, and then in between those would be reading in righteousness. So this is a conviction and conversation. So the particular thing that we're going to hit on today is, I'm calling this episode Bloods and Crits. You feel me? Because I feel like, I don't know about y'all, but I keep hearing over and over again, culture war. And I know that's not a new idea. That's been around since I think the Reformation era in America's history, so to speak, around World War One or Two, maybe. Civil rights movement, definitely. But that kind of phraseology has like resurfaced into today's like social situation, to the point where folks are kind of making it to seem like we are so much at odds between like this faction of people and this faction of people that it like it's causing some not only like friction but destruction of this supposed like the goal of unity. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So in particular, it seems to be like two sides, I'm using air quotes, to this argument about critical race theory. The sides that have been, I guess, like named or characterized, those aren't the words I'm looking for, but like assumed almost, one could say, has been Christians or Christianity, when really in like parentheses, there's a certain type of Christian that we're talking about here. And those who are studying, practicing, or teaching critical race theory. So I guess my first question would be like, yeah, how did we get here? Or how do y'all think we got here? Because like, were we talking about this stuff a couple years ago?
I don't recall before a couple years ago ever talking about or even hearing of CRT. And I'm talking about somebody that was you know, in undergrad, in religious studies, and minoring in African diaspora studies. And I don't ever recall hearing the term critical race theory. It seems like it was something that was that's been fairly new in academia, as far as getting beyond just an individual or group of individuals developing a theory to being something that's more widespread and espoused and taught to students in college campuses. But today, you know, it's been used and even purported to be in elementary schools, you know, and I just go, well, that's preposterous. But, you know, it's the new boogeyman. It's the new boogeyman. And so it's being used as, it's something that's ambiguous enough that it can be shaped into something that people don't really know what it is. So the narrative can be shaped about what it is, and it's shaped in such a way that it's made to be something that's scary and unknown and unfamiliar, and it's infiltrating, you know, every aspect of all of our cultural institutions. And so we need to be aware of this as Christian soldiers and fight back. As a matter of fact, I just got back from another county, and as you drive from where I live into the next county over, there's there's still some political signs up from the election cycle.
Really?
And one of them is talking about voting for school board.
Okay.
And the sign next to it is a big one talking about stop CRT in our schools.
What? That's crazy. I was going to ask you about that, because, like, you're basically in the thick of it, being that close to Washington, D.C. So, like, I was going to – you actually answered a question I was going to ask later. Like, are you still seeing, like, people – are you still seeing a contention in this conversation? And obviously you are, if even still from the – and this was the midterm election cycle or even before that?
It was both. So the one that just happened in November,
right?
And then earlier in that year, there was, you know, like the primary election that happened. So yeah, we got kind of two cycles back to back.
Oh wow!
Of all of the political hoopla. Yeah, so I'm very glad that season is over, that we get a little break, because it gets ridiculous in this area.
Yeah, hopefully it's over. Like, some people, they still cooking out there, but at least, like, in terms of the voting season and hearing like you said, all that junk, all that hoopla, at least all that noise is kind of dying down a bit. Yeah.
Well, how about politician, you're always campaigning.
Always. So. Yeah. Yeah. So it's somewhere. how about for you, Dylan? I know your social situation is quite different. Like, we're both here in Indiana. But I also think about, like, our particular context, like graduating from a predominantly white Christian institute in the Midwest, specifically in Indiana. And like, just hearing like all the in the timing of it, like we graduated around the time of it was like right before Mike Brown, but definitely a little bit after Trayvon Martin. And like, we saw like conversations that none of us were having freshman year starting to surface. I don't know, like, how much contention you saw at that time. I didn't see that much, but definitely after we graduated, that's when we started, like,
that was when, yeah, same. So for context for everyone, you know, so we started and finished undergrad same time, 2010, 2014. I noticed greatest for me, I noticed for me in particular, so I went straight into seminary at AU immediately afterwards from 2014 to 2017. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely from it's hard to pinpoint down exactly, but I mean, it was right around 14, 15, 16 time frame, somewhere in that 2 year time frame, at least for me, was when I started noticing an awful lot. It's just where the mask started coming off a little bit more. It's just, I wasn't around the
before
same.
Before the mask started going on or coming on.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah,
we're
right.
saying that metaphorically yeah. speaking. Yeah.
Right. And so a better way for me was like the goggles were coming off where they were like the blinders yeah. were on for me. And it's just like, oh, you know, just came from a small white, not too rural, I suppose, but not exactly a metropolis area, Shelbyville mm-hmm. of Indiana. And then, like you said, small white Christian liberal arts college. So it's like, it wasn't until I went into seminary about 14, 15, 16, that time frame was when everything I started becoming a little bit more clear. I feel like at least with college, like for myself, it's like I didn't feel like I had the need to pay attention too much to what was going on politically. I had that level of privilege for certain because my family was always kind of apolitical in the sense like we don't need to pay attention to this stuff because it never affects us. Other than the one thing that my parents did instill with me that I still carry to this day is definitely a healthy dose of cynicism when it does concern our elected officials. And to never just trust that sort of system at face value. So then in seminary, when then all of a sudden, you know, I'm starting to be able to listen to more classmates who are sharing about their experiences, sexism in the church, racism, homophobia, transphobia, on and so forth. And I'm just like, it's just for me, I can't recall a specific moment, but that was when, again, from 14, 15, 16, it's just like, I hadn't the slightest clue because as a straight white Christian man, I did not have any of those issues. I was the one at the age of 17 and 18 in a small non-denominational church. Everyone was so happy to hear that when I wanted to go off to school to become a minister, they gave me preaching opportunities with no training. No, just you know, that level of privilege, just like, oh my gosh, which now I look back on is completely cringy at this point in time. And I'm kind of a little glad I don't have those sermons recorded at this point in time. Anyway. But that's when I said the goggles, like the blinders came off, was right around that time frame.
Yeah.
Because I was surrounded in a different community of people. That was also, I would like to point out too, is when I got a little bit more back involved with Twitter too, which was also for you know, if by happenstance in 2023 people aren't familiar with Twitter, it does allow you to be able to follow a wide plethora of people from many different demographic yeah. you know, backgrounds. And that was a big eye opener for me. And then it was around that same time frame in seminary when it was just like, I wasn't surrounded by predominantly the same white Christian men for the most part, was when I was able to be like, no, I lived in a bubble in the middle of in Indiana, and then realized that probably half the stuff I was told may not have been, exactly, you know, honest either. So it's like
yeah. And so like what's interesting for the both of y'all now, what like I would surmise that I've observed from the two of you is that now like y'all two have, though you have like moved away from those spaces, you haven't like always moved away from the people who were in those spaces, maybe still in those spaces, or definitely carry the same notions and the same ideas and ideologies of those spaces. And now like we're all, you know, we're still on social media. Like we still have these people there, maybe in our families, they show up at the functions, and now we got to deal with that former mentality, whether you adopted it or not, you know what I'm saying? Now you have to deal with it, knowing what you know now or doing what you do now. Like what has it been like now, like either fielding these conversations? Cause Dylan, yo man, your post game be fire, bro. Like screenshots you, I always had to remind you to like make shareable.
Yeah.
Or, Pastor Colby, like, I can imagine, like, at any given point, if you mention any of this stuff on the pulpit, I'm sure there's got to be somebody in the congregation who is upset about, like, any of this stuff that you might be saying. So, like, what has that been like lately, having or witnessing, even if you're not having it, witnessing those conversations, and, you know, like, across the aisles or across the ways of social situations and social media and in church spaces, in particular when it comes to, like, critical race theory and the gospel?
Yeah, I mean, there's landmines all over the place, right? So you just have to, I mean, you have to be wise as far as how you broach these sorts of subjects, because people have strong views one way or the other. And so it's, but you also can't be shy and shy away from speaking on truth. You know, speaking and trying to bring people together, because at the end of the day, you know, the cross of Christ is vertical and horizontal.
Yes.
You know, so we don't just teach about, you know, these are the principles that Jesus wanted us to learn and how to relate with him, but also, you know, his arms were outstretched. And I like to use that as a symbol of he's in the middle trying to pull the extremes into him and towards each other. And so, you know, we can't be so fired up about our differences politically that we miss the basic core principles of Jesus's teaching to love one another, even those that we would deem our enemies. But also to recognize one another as neighbor, you know, as well, regardless of whether you're a Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative, and all of those other things.
Yes, sir. We need that reminder. We do. Yeah. We do. How about for you, Dylan?
Remind me of the original question.
Yeah. Malachi. So, like, what has it been like witnessing these, for lack of a better term, these, like, arguments and debates about where people are about critical race theory and Christianity and the gospel and whatnot.
Right, right. So for me, it's a matter of I struggle as an Enneagram 1. I don't know if either of you by chance.
Two wing three.
Yeah. So I'm a 1, wing 2. And so ones tend to get,
we got
really
a 7
focused
over here with Pastor Colby. Okay.
Ones tend to get really focused on unnecessary binaries. So right and wrong, good and bad, you know, that sort of a thing. So it's like, so I have to really trying to remind myself that there's not always, a right or wrong way to approach certain things. But I've, there is an exception to every rule, and that includes this rule, so it makes it paradoxical. So then the question then becomes, so then when is there an exception and when isn't there one? And so at the end of the day, it's, if we're not in relationship with one another, if we're not connected at least in some capacity, if I'm alienating someone unintentionally, or intentionally, I guess, for that matter, we're not going to be able to, you know, the things that we talk about, trying to show Jesus to people or spread the gospel, like, that's not going to happen if there's not some form of a relationship with people.
Yeah.
However, I have learned that at the same time, we don't all necessarily owe everybody everything of ourselves. So we can't be all things to all people either. And it's that healthy dose of trying to figure out what do I owe people? You know, especially, you know, coming as a Christian minister, what do I owe people? Which I do think is quite a bit. I think, you know, we owe our communities and surrounding communities quite a bit of things. But at the same time, it's, there is a certain degree. It's like, I can't always ask, you know, it's trying, basically boils down to what's being asked in good faith and what's not. And that's always hard to I shouldn't say always. It's usually hard to discern. That was something around in 2014, 15, 16 was where I started entertaining almost everything with a lot of different people. I have in that time frame, I've also blocked a lot of people and have been blocked by a lot of people. Yeah. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay because it's a matter of trying to figure out actively discerning where do we draw those lines and what hills do we die on? Because I do think that there are some that are worth dying on for that matter. But at the same time too, we also have to figure out how best to live in some capacity with these people. Now, again, for context for everyone else, it's also important to note that I do not pastor a church. It is, again, I have the privilege of being able to say a lot more than what I could probably get away with than if I was pastoring an actual congregation. So working in a hospital setting, yes, I do adhere to a general organized statewide church body. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's where my credentials do come from. But I am willing to recognize that my privilege is that I can get away with a lot of things because I don't have to worry about pissing off a few congregants either in that regard. So, but yeah, it's what's being asked in good faith. If someone's asking something in good faith, I, to the best of my ability, try to extend that grace to people as best as possible. And I do so especially because, again, I'm sure I can't think of specific examples, but I'm sure that I performed many microaggressions in my time before I started learning about how, you know, everyone didn't grow up in the same way that I did. In a, like I said, in the small white Christian community that was very patriarchal. So, so that for me is just like, okay, so I need to be kind to myself to a degree, also hold myself accountable to move forward. Cause once we know better, do better. And then with that, what's being asked in good faith, if we don't know, then probably entertain it until given enough reason to suggest that we're not asking something in good faith. And then to the best of ability, then set up a boundary. If you're going to do X, then, you know, then I'm going to do Y in this particular regard. And I've had to do that a couple of times. And I still to this day have some people who I think continually try to misunderstand everything that I try to share. And for that matter, too, I can be snarky. Yes. I do try,
which is like so funny to watch, by the way.
Right. I do try to a certain degree to not be snarky. I try to stay away from buzzwords as best as possible, which is really annoying because like CRT should not be a buzzword.
Right.
It shouldn't. And you know, and how woke has been misappropriated. So now it's, you know, it's another thing that's used by right wingers at this point to just to denigrate Black people. So I'm like,
yeah,
in Black culture. So it's just like I can acknowledge that it's frustrating that you have to adapt to that and acknowledge the grieving process with that. But the reality is that we have to adapt to that, unfortunately. And so I try my best to stay away from what are being used as buzzwords more often than not, in the hopes to try to help connect with people over like, okay, I hear that you're really upset and angry about this, but like, what are we concerned with? Are you actually concerned about safety? Because then we can redirect it towards that. It's like, I'm hearing that you're concerned about the safety of your own family and well-being when it pertains to like immigration or something like that. You can find out real quick by asking and trying to connect with people what the deeper meaning is a little bit. By asking those follow-up questions. And then if they're really just wanting to hone in and just, you know, basically they just want to, they basically want to say the slurs, but can't sort of a deal. It's like, okay, then we're done. If, you know, sometimes I don't even offer a further conversation at that point, but it's really trying to discern who's asking stuff in good faith and who isn't. And again, it's always easy. It's always easier said than done.
Yeah, that's good. And I love hearing that as a strategy, like getting to the heart of the matter, like what is someone's like actual real concern. Real quick, I heard you speak earlier about like these, I guess like these binaries that we create, like, what do y'all two make of that? Like these, the binary of there's this side and there's this side when it comes to this conversation, like there's, we categorize where it seems like to be like, okay, we categorize these ideas and ideologies and practices and ideas as Christianity, but when we get to social justice, it's arguable what, you know what I'm saying, what is actually Christian, and then like a lot of things get tossed to this, to another side, and saying like, oh, that's the social justice warriors, or oh, that's critical race theory. Like, why do these binaries exist in our current context?
We clamor for things that are safe and cut and dry, you know, and really even what you just described is far from reality. Social justice and Christian justice, really the lines are blurred. They're not as, you know, defined as some people would like to make them out to be. And I think it's because of that messiness that, you know, there is always a push against that to try and force people to the extremes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in my opinion, even our two-party system in this country forces us, forces the populace towards the extreme. And so people retreat to, you know, the most conservative or the most liberal ideologies, and try to define what Christianity is through their own lens.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can clearly say and point out who is against them or who stands in opposition. And that's, it's just really, it's a straw man argument oftentimes.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's gaslighting. It turns into all of these different tactics to get us not to really have a fact-based conversation with one another. Through with an open heart of empathy, and it just turns into finger pointing and all of that nonsense. So that's, you know, that's my take on it.
That's good. That's good. Dylan, how about you?
Well, I nail right on the head. That's exactly it. It's we crave structure. We crave safety. Mm. And I would go as so far as to say that, you know, I critique capitalism an awful lot. And I think for the majority, the 90% of us, just focusing on the US alone, like we're pretty much used to, our parents are used to, you know, basically being pushed to our limits, where things could be easily taken away by our bosses, by landlords, by so many things, you know. So people are used to, it's like, well, we have to take care of ourselves as best as possible. And then when we're not, when we're stripped of that safety, I'm sure, you know, I'm not a neurologist. I'm not a psychotherapist either. So I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in that regard, but I'm sure that a lot of that has a lot, you know, that plays on our development. And that then in turns, as we get older, then influences our politics and our theology to begin with as well. And it's just easier when you have all of the, basically all of the media trying to condense everything into bite-sized pieces for us to easily understand.
Yeah.
Then it's really easy. Whereas to have a nuanced conversation about what actually critical race theory is and where it actually is and isn't being taught. But no one wants to hear that when we're already angry and upset because I lost my job and, you know, or, you know, I just had to bury a loved one due to COVID or something along those lines. Everything is so fueled, and it's real easy because all the media elites who get paid a ridiculous amount of money can sit up in their ivory towers and then just basically say what they want to get the rest of, because we're, and who's to say, I as a leftist oftentimes have to check myself because I want to point my finger at like Democrats and Republicans, as far as I'm concerned, are the two sides of the same coin. And I see so many issues with the whole two-party system. And I'm just like, I'm so like, and I get frustrated when people say that, you know, it's, well, the Republicans are the worst ones. I'm like, I would technically agree with you on that. But however, we can't be blindsided by what, you know, the Democratic Party is also doing as well. And it's just like, so I get frustrated. And so it's really easy for me to then it on Twitter and listen to other leftists or left-leaning people who will then spout off all sorts of things. And we could be technically right, but that doesn't, at the end of the day, is that doing much for me? Is that doing much for anybody else? And am I channeling that anger in some sort of way to then move forward to learn and to hopefully do something better? Hopefully.
That's good.
So
that's good. Yeah, I love hearing that from the both of y'all, and like the connectivity between your responses there. And I'll just say this real quick and hurry up and move to these last few questions here. Like, to tie this into the title of this episode, like, with safety being that concern that a lot of people have, it is like gang wars a lot of times, like, because that's how a lot of times gangs are set up. It's a safety measure. Like, this is where I live over here. I mean, like, historically, street gangs like Bloods, Crips, and whatnot, those were set up to protect the neighborhood from, in general, outsiders, in particular, cops who would infiltrate those neighborhoods and, you know, brutalize people. So those gangs were set up to protect the neighborhood. They were also set up to settle like domestic squabbles and resident, like squabbles in between neighbors, between household members and whatnot. They were actually like a pretty good thing. And with the introduction of things like, you know, drugs being like planted into neighborhoods and like perhaps other things that were creating concerns for safety. I feel like I can't like rightly articulate the history of how, or the evolution of street gangs from how they started to how they are now, aside from the crack epidemic. But needless to say, you see a young buck coming up, wherever they live, they walk to school and get chased by a gang of another neighborhood, and they beat the brakes off of them, you know what I'm saying? And they're looking for protection. It's very alluring for them to just align themselves, right, or associate themselves with whoever's in their neighborhood who seems to offer them some kind of protection, offer them the safety in their mindset of like, oh, okay, if I these people are looking out for my best interest, which is in that case like me and my life. And so it's no surprise in this context, in the political context of things, that people are just staying in their own silos and attacking others so that they can feel protected. Not necessarily, don't get me wrong, there are those who are attacking for the sake of destroying. So there is that. We do need to acknowledge that. But then there are also folks who are like attacking with a shield, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
It does. Mm-hmm.
Well, you talked about culture wars earlier. I mean, that can be the same thing as gang wars. And it just depends on the context that you're using it in.
Yeah.
Because the Bloods and the Crips and Pyros and all that sort of stuff, depending on your perspective, when you toss around the term like a gang, to some that instills fear.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, their perception is they're violent. They are, you know, the lowest rung of society, and we need to protect our enclave, our people from that sort of element. Mm-hmm. Whereas another perspective is this is a system of accountability that's been built within our own community to self-govern, to self-protect.
Yes.
And it's protection from outsiders. So there's a misperception of what the gangs were.
Yeah.
It just depends on who you're talking about. I don't necessarily think that it's a bad thing. You know, think about the Black Panthers back in the day.
Yeah.
the Black Panthers, if you asked people that lived in the ghettos of Oakland, they would have spoke glowingly of the Black Panthers.
That's right.
Until they grew in number and power, and they were systematically destabilized.
Right.
Yep.
And so we see that happen in Philly. We saw that happen in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there was a group, a minority group, that had its own interests, its own neighborhood at interest and at heart, that was seen as a threat to the larger culture, to the governing system. And so it was systematically destabilized, demonized. And then the media picks up on it and starts portraying images that reinforce and support, you know, the agenda. So you talk about history, like I can nerd out on the history of stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
But we still see it today. It's no different. It's just more nuanced. It's more dog whistles. It's subtle, but it has the same bite. And those that pick up on it, they seize that opportunity to reinforce what they already believed about people that they deem the other.
Confirmation bias. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you bring up something important that is like the point that I'm trying to like drive home with, like with this idea, like yes, the title is a clever play on words, if I do say so myself. But
I agree.
It also like it like pokes the bear of like people's preconceived notion that there are like these two sides when it comes to how we do Christian social justice. You know what I'm saying? That there it's either this is Christian in origin by the book, and by the book I mean like by our own standards. Or it is not only different, but it's like in opposition. It's the direct opposite. It is a threat. But like, and like the, in some cases, yes. You know what I'm saying? There are things that are in direct opposition to what we believe and the way in which we are trying to show the world the love of God. But then like when we're talking about social justice, in particular social justice for Black and brown people, like should we not forget that there are Black and brown Christians who are going through the same struggles that other Black and brown people are going through because of the systems that have been set up to intentionally, whether we believe it or not, intentionally, even if it's impersonal, to destroy their lives. And so like whether it being like a across the aisle kind of binary, it's more so like I'm trying to think of another like linear structure here. I'm not saying it's a teeter-totter, because like that would assume that at some point the trajectory could change very quickly at that. But more like it's more like there's a hierarchical imbalance, one could say. Like I don't have a clear image for it right now that would like bring out a one Emmy, Dylan, and my analytical approach to making sense of things. But like the difference, it's not, oh, it's us versus them. And either you in this thing or you are a part of them. It's like, no, what they are saying is what Black and brown Christians have been saying this whole time in America. There is no difference. This is the same stuff that we were saying in the civil rights movement. And this is not a war that we're going through, or it should not be. It should be like what you were saying earlier, Pastor Colby, an accountability system. Like we are holding up the word of God to, whether we see folks that like as a Pharisee of some sort, like, cause that's what Jesus was doing. Like, he, don't get me wrong, like, he had things to say to people who were in sin, like, you know, sin no more. Of course that was said, right? But he had some harsh words, some very stingy words to say to those who were in power, who were disenfranchising those in their own community. Y'all go ahead and respond to that.
Jesus had really strong words for people that were exclusionists and not inclusionists. So, You know, the people that saw themselves as self-righteous, and it was, we are the blessed people. We are the carriers of the word. We are the keepers of the law. He had harsh words for people that were very exclusive in their language and viewpoint. But the thing, I think the trouble with CRT is, at its core, it's simply trying to acknowledge that racism exists and has infiltrated the very systems and infrastructure of our society.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to believe that America is a Christian nation and that it was established for the benefit and wealth of white people, white landowning males, I mean, that was originally who benefited from the creation of this country, then you don't want to admit that it wasn't your own effort.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't your superiority that got you your position in life, your preferred privilege or whatever status in life, that you have to acknowledge. CRT says you have to acknowledge that systems were built to skew the playing field, to hold others back while you got a head start. And people don't like that. They want to believe that they pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps, that no one gave them a handout, that no one gave them a head start, that everything has been fair from the beginning, from 1776 on, and all men have been created equal in this country. So why can't
and now everybody, with inalienable rights. Yes.
Why can't we all you know, achieve wealth and everybody, we all have the same rights, you know? So CRT challenges that. And we don't like that. Some people don't like that. I'll say,
I'll say it. White people don't like it. I'll say it. White people don't like it. They don't.
It's anybody that's had a head start, had any sort of advantage or privilege in life, to say that chips away at your then ego that says, you know, look what I did, look what I've been able to accomplish in my life. And you have to acknowledge, well, you might have achieved it, but you didn't do it on your own. It wasn't just your intellect. It wasn't just your talents. You know, you had a lot of other advantages that you need to acknowledge. And maybe, just maybe, if you're able to acknowledge that, then you can see that others aren't inferior, that others have the beauty and giftedness in other segments of society that maybe you had overlooked because you were looking at your own superiority. But I, you know, it's funny. I was just watching, I think it was yesterday. I don't know if y'all heard this announcement, but racism doesn't exist in this country any longer. According to Nikki Haley, who is running for president, we really, you know, this is the last time that we're going to have to talk about this because racism doesn't exist.
Didn't she change her name? Because isn't she?
She's an Indian child of Indian immigrants. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
And Ann Coulter reminded her of that. But yeah.
That's wild.
Neither here nor there.
That's wild to me. What? Okay. I mean, and like, this is the problem. Like, people who are so scared to even explore that it is within the realm of possibility that perhaps America is not what you think it is in its origin and in its, as it stands today. And that's scary.
Yeah.
America has this great potential to be great, and it's baked into the fabric of the, you know, our founding documents and ideals to strive towards a more perfect union, right? But you can only get better. Like, we know this by the whole mental health movement that's been happening recently. You can only get better if you take a moment to self-reflect and evaluate what your issues and needs are and get help and move forward from there. If you don't ever take a look at yourself and go, man, here's a problem that I have, here's a bias that I possess, you know, then you'll never see those blind spots and just continue moving forward arrogantly, thinking that you are already great. So why should you have to do the hard work of trying to get better? I'm already great. And I think that's been a part of America's complex. You know, make America great again. Well, you've got to acknowledge that at some point in the not so distant history, we weren't great.
Right. Or maybe great for you.
Yeah, maybe great for some people, you know, but it wasn't great for everybody. And if America isn't a great nation for all of its inhabitants, then can it really call itself great at all?
Speaking of that idea of like the perfect unity, we'll try to land with these last two questions. Like, I don't know if either one of you two, Dylan, I'm quite sure you have like encountered someone like mentioning this person, but for you, Pastor Colby, someone by the name of Neil Shinvey. He wrote, I guess he's a theologian. Like, his credentials more so are in either like science in general or chemistry, but he is a Christian writer, blogger, researcher, scholar, and a lot of people who are trying to say like Christian or CRT is incompatible with the gospel, they point to this person a lot. And he brings up this idea of biblical unity and how you know, diving into and leaning into these challenging conversations about race and racism as on the systemic level is somehow a threat to biblical unity, and that this causes more division than it would or could biblical unity. What are y'all's thoughts towards that?
I don't think so, personally. I don't see why it would, in all honesty. Yes, I'm hesitant to take anything that's not, you know, first century ancient history that's going on in Jesus' time frame to figure out and take anything later to then reapply to any biblical text. But I fail to see how the two can't be compatible with one another, because CRT, as you know, already mentioned, it's already acknowledging the facts of the matter, which is the inherent biases and all the other flaws that are baked into our institutions here, especially within the legal system. And that's just a fact. It just doesn't, there's no sugarcoating it. There's no, it is what it is. And so for me, as I tell people who ask questions about, you know, generally I get a lot of people ask questions about deconstructing stuff of that nature. What I don't give them the whole, you know, kit and caboodle of everything. It's just like the turning point for me in my theology and my politics in particularly was focused on what do we know? What do we actually know versus what we actually don't know? And how does that influence, again, my theology and politics? And that includes what we know archaeologically speaking about what was going on during Jesus' time frame or other parts when the books of the Bible were written. That includes just what do we know about the literature of what was written? What do we know about how those things, you know, just as from like just from a writer's perspective, like how does that, what do we know about that versus what we don't know? How much is that influencing? And so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Same with CRT. Fact of the matter remains is that there are copious amounts of flaws within our legal system and other institutions here within the U.S. They've been there from the beginning, which is, you know, makes sense coming from, you know, slave owning white land, owning men. So that makes perfect sense. So that being said, CRT just is acknowledging that and how that, so I don't see how that is different from achieving biblical unity, because when I hear people say, well, it comes in place of that, or it keeps us from having unity, what I'm hearing is people who benefit how the systems exist do not want to acknowledge that and want to let go of whatever that privilege is that they have because they feel threatened with it. That's what I hear when people say, well, I think the two are incompatible. And it's like, well, you probably think they're incompatible because your version of Christianity is coked in this white supremacy nonsense. Mm. And of course it would be heavily threatened by CRT. Of course that makes sense. So all that to say, I fail to see how they, and again, obviously I'm not a legal expert. I'm not an expert in CRT, you know, but I fail to see how they're incompatible with each other.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they stand in direct opposition to one another. I don't think they're necessarily, you know, inextricably linked together. But again, there's overlap, and for people that try to put CRT up as this this demonic anti-Christian, anti-American system of ideals that's going to threaten the, you know, moral fiber of this nation, I think that's nonsense. The hard part is people don't want to acknowledge, it takes humility to accept what CRT will reveal. And what I mean by that is CRT is looking at history and the structures of our nation through two lenses, the oppressed and the oppressor. And as much as we don't want to believe that that dichotomy has existed throughout the history of this nation, that will lend itself towards an arrogant approach to history versus CRT, which will reveal the areas where racism has been so entrenched in the building of the foundation of this nation that it requires humility to look back and see things through the lens of people that, you know, had their necks stepped on, that were pushed to the back of the line, that, you know, the people that benefited from it have to relinquish their privilege and their arrogance to then adopt a different perspective that's completely foreign to them. And in order to do that, it's going to require humility. So I really think that is more in line with biblical unity, and how we are going to achieve that than anything. It's going to take humility from those that were benefactors from these flawed systems. And it's going to take a boldness from people that have been oppressed, and a patient endurance. Because, I mean, how many times did we talk about, especially during the pandemic lockdown, fatigue at seemingly every time someone's life became a hashtag?
Man, every time.
And we had to, it was like America rediscovered, oh my gosh, there are people that are still being oppressed in this country.
Right.
And you have to have the conversations all over again.
Yeah.
About that this isn't the first time this has happened. This isn't the first time that we've brought it up. You know, and so there's some fortitude from both sides, some posturing from both sides that we're going to have to continue on speaking out and enduring from one side, and then also humbling ourselves from another side, if we're going to finally come together and have some semblance of biblical unity. Because it wasn't Trayvon Martin wasn't the first one, you know. Freddie Gray wasn't the first one. You know, we could just go on. Rodney King wasn't the first one. Not even Emmett Till. Like,
I was about to say Emmett Till, yeah.
Going back further, you know, until we get to who? Crispus Attucks? Like, how far back do we have to go to say this has been going on literally since the beginning of this country?
Yeah. Dylan, what do you think is needed for what we're seeing as, like, biblical unity in these conversations?
I'm not sure. And if I'm being honest too, I'm not, again, I appreciate being invited to this table, but I also want to acknowledge that at least for this particular question, I'm not so certain if my opinion is all that needed, if that makes sense.
I was saying, like, I guess two things. One, like, I feel like with the people who are under your pastoral care, like, whether it's like folks in your line of work, or like even people in your circle of influence, like there's that leadership in that sense. And then secondly, like, given the fact that, like, we are all like we have a shared, like, common struggle, from the things that we witness in our social engagement, and then of course for the sake of this podcast. But you are invited into this conversation. Like, at the end of the day, like, we're dealing, like, with an in-house issue, you know what I'm saying? Something that we it's that accountability system that Pastor Colby was talking about earlier. Like, we gotta get this together as we continue to be in fellowship with other believers. And especially, like, if we're trying to speak to those who either have, like, turned away from these spaces because of this kind of mess, or for those who are outside looking in or like, nah, good with this whole Jesus stuff. So, like, in the context of, like, the in-house conversation, like, what do you think is, like, necessary for us to actually have biblical unity as we navigate these discussions?
Sure. I think one thing that could be particularly helpful, again, I still say fairly reluctantly, is acknowledging, you know, Colby, like you said, you know, Trayvon Martin was the first, Emmett Till wasn't the first. But at some point in time, those of us who finally do get there, however long that does take, is at least acknowledging thanks to my therapist, I can acknowledge that, you know, two things can be true at the same time. It is frustrating for it to take so long for some people, or for some people to never, ever, ever, ever get it. But then also be, what's the word? When I hear someone finally come around and they seem to be finally getting it and they're in those early stages. So they're just like, they've been looking at the pool, but now they're finally dipping their toes in. We're finally standing in the pool. Finally, we've been talking about it forever. Finally getting there, been, you know, going off about, you know, all sorts of things, trying to at least, you know, engage in social media posts or one-on-one conversations with people. And it's like, now they finally stuck their toes in, whatever that looks like, or they, their feet are in the water. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge to people that I'm so happy that you're here and acknowledging that, because it's because in that moment when for them, for that individual, it's scary. We're acknowledging, it's just like, we're finally acknowledging that maybe I am wrong, which is a piece of, you know, the pride, but it's also that's a piece of like, maybe I'm not as safe as I once was. And so learning that's like, okay, if that is met with some form of acknowledgement of, I'm not saying that they need to be handed everything and be like, great, okay, you know, and put up on this big pedestal, not saying that, but right. It needs to be met with a more of a warm welcome and saying, I'm so happy that you're here, and let's figure out how to navigate and move forward so we can move forward more through the pool. I think is what's helpful, because that was, I will say that that was helpful for me initially. I was learning, I was asking questions, and sometimes I wasn't asking maybe the most appropriate questions. By doing so, I was inflicting more microaggressions in the process. And I'm sure that that was frustrating to the people to a certain degree that I was asking questions around, but I'm extremely grateful, because it's kind of like blunt. I was blind at one point, and then now I'm starting to see a little bit, but things are foggy and hazy, and I'm trying to get my bearings a little bit straight. And it's more comfortable to keep moving forward if someone is to a certain degree holding my hand through that process. But again, like I said, I do also acknowledge, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, in this particular instance pertaining to any, racial reconciliation, I'm not saying that Black people need to be holding the hands of white people constantly and cater to their feelings. I'm not saying anything along those lines, but just a certain degree of, I'm happy that you're here, so let's figure out how to move forward. I will say personally, for me, was very helpful at trying to move forward, as opposed to if I was met with, took you long enough, finally, or whatever, I would have been hesitant. And again, and I see the other side where a lot of people, it's like, well, were they a true ally if they were so easily to quickly to turn? I get that. So the practicality piece kind of wins me over a little bit more in that particular regard, to just like, let's, again, we don't need to put them up on a pedestal because they did the itty bitty, you know, minimum to just step their toes in the pool just a little bit. Not saying we need to do that, but just like, hey, I'm happy that you're here, and let's figure out how to navigate moving forward from here is what I think would be particularly helpful. Does that answer your question, Malachi?
Yeah, like the fear has to be like replaced with something. Otherwise, people are going to like fall back into what has been comfortable for them for, you know, X amount of years or whatever.
And for me, to tie it to Christ, is that's kind of how I see Christ in that particular regard. You know, this figure who was both fully human and fully God at the same time, who was crucified on a cross, is that same person again who also extends out entirely. It's not fair. I acknowledge it. It's not even remotely fair in the slightest whatsoever to be even going as far as dealing with systemic racism, to then be met with you know, a white person who's finally getting it after 30, 40, 50 years, finally. And it's like, and you want me to go ahead and clap for this person because they finally dipped their toes in the pool? I get it. As best as I can envision that, I understand as best as I possibly can in that regard. But I see Christ going as far as to be like, okay, I'm happy that you're here, but that accountability piece is that will hold your hand through the process, or I'll at least be close by, kind of like guiding a child through the pool moving forward. That's how I see Christ kind of moving forward in that particular regard. And and I think I think a lot of us could benefit from trying to take a similar approach. If that makes sense.
Of course.
Yeah, I see it as in the way that God's love and God's plan says, I don't need you to accomplish what I want, but I desire you to join with me, is the same kind of perspective that I look at the perpetual fight for justice in this country. That honestly, we don't need anyone else to fight for us. But we do desire others to fight with us.
That's good.
And that, from a Christian perspective, supersedes ethnicity.
Yeah.
And that is when a Christian engages in any fight for justice, when we see someone else who is suffering or has been oppressed in some way, we take it upon ourselves to jump in the fight with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't think it's all that important to look at how long, you know, it took you to get in the fight.
Right.
don't center, you know, my thing is, let me try and remove my ego to not center myself and go, I'm worried about what people are going to say.
Yeah.
So I'll just hang in the back, but at least I'm in the room. No, this is going to take boldness from all of us, from all of us to lend our voices, because we acknowledge that even those that are allies have weapons that we don't have at our own disposal.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not saying completely lay down your privilege. We're saying bring your privilege.
Bring that privilege right over here.
let's use that for the betterment, you know, of the society.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's man, we're all in this together. And as Christians, we have to be to go back to Malachi's ingenious labeling of this conversation. Like, we're all united under the blood of Jesus. And that's the thing that makes us one. That's where the unity comes from. If we can see that, and at the same time recognize and appreciate each other's ethnic and complexion differences, and celebrate all of that, then that's what's going to push us further towards being unified in the way that Christ wants us to be unified and for his body to be one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just let that rest. That's good. That's good word from both of y'all. That's good word. And yeah, I just see it like as we look at, you know, folks in the Bible, like Paul, Peter, I mean, like even Jesus, like, you know, there were times where he's like, listen, y'all ain't getting this, but like, I'm going to still try to break this down for you, because you were called to be here. I'm not going to say like, I called you to be here, like as in like, I'm speaking as Christ, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But when we think about like brotherhood, fellowship and whatnot, or just that family sense, it's like, yeah, there's some where I am tempted to be like, man, it took you long enough to get here. But at the same time, I'm like, I do like see someone's journey, and like, there's some people like who, when we think about like new converts, you know what I'm saying? Some come in like with that fire energy. That's a good refresher for like a lot of people, that one, that there's still hope, you know what I'm saying? And that, that they come with that kind of fire energy that's needed to go back and talk with those who they were formerly like aligned with, politically and whatnot, just as like a new convert would go back and tell their friends like the good news of Jesus that they had just heard at a Sunday sermon, or, you know, I don't know, from a friend or something like that. You know what I'm saying? That, and they can reach out to them in a way that that pastor probably can't as readily as they could, you know what I'm saying? Sure, and then, sure. And then, yeah, like there are times where there will be, I just see it all as like the process of sanctification. And so thinking about like biblical unity, it's like, yeah, like what does unity look like in a familial structure to where the love is met with accountability and where grace is met with a challenge, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And like we can go on and on about that. Those scriptures that talk about, you know, like where Paul was like, yo, should we like just keep on sinning, like, because the more we sin, the more that there's grace abounding, like, let's just keep adding that up. He's like, by no means, my guy, like, stop, try to stop sinning, like. But the same token, like, yes, there is the grace that that doesn't allow for condemnation, you know. It's complex, it's complicated, and like, we all gonna figure it out together. I love it. I appreciate the both of y'all being here and having this conversation with me, having this conversation in conversation with others that I brought onto this podcast and other thinkers alike, and listeners who are, you know, looking for some clarity in all of this complexity and whatnot. I appreciate y'all.
Honored to be here, Bear, man. Appreciate the discussion.
Yeah, and I love how this is going. And I love how this is like going back to the individual conversations I've had with both of y'all in season two. Like, and it's kind of funny, Pastor Kobe, that you mentioned allyship, because that's the episode I had Dylan on, and we talked about that.
Oh, right, yeah.
And Dylan, I don't know if you know, I had Pastor Kobe on when we talked about unconditioning racist language in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So that was,
I remember that one.
Yeah, it was that's him. That's him. That's the guy. So the reason I'm bringing that up, not only for the both of y'all's sake, but also for the listeners, like, definitely, if you haven't listened to those episodes or if you need a refresher, like, go ahead and like, people listen to both of those. And that'll give you like more breadth to this conversation. But hey, we gotta go. I don't want to hear from Latoya. I don't want to hear from Kirsten or from Kristen. Sorry, I know a Kirsten, a Kristen, and a Chris. Like, I like all the variants. Okay, I don't want to hear from y'all's significant others. Y'all's to those whom you two are espoused. Nope. It ain't gonna be my problem. Not tonight.
I'm a free man until the morning. My wife is away, so.
Oh, in that case, you got another hour. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, all right. But yeah, thank you too once again. And yeah, until next time, y'all. Until next time, in theory. Well, there you have it, Famo. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Your involvement in this conversation is pivotal to how we as a community get better. I don't want your contribution to this conversation just to be you listening. Don't get me wrong. There's a time and place to listen. There, you know, even in this episode, there are plenty of moments in which I'm just listening and receiving. But it's best when we hear each other's thoughts and listen to each other's thoughts and respond accordingly and learn and grow together. With that being said, I would love to hear your feedback on this episode. Follow us on Instagram, The Unapologetics Podcast, or you can follow me personally.
at Ascribe Writes. That's AscribeWrites. Also, if you look in the show notes, you'll see a link to my link tree where you can see how to follow me in this podcast in various places and spaces. You can follow me on Facebook, Malachi Carter. But definitely leave a 5-star rating on this podcast wherever you're listening to it on. And leave a review as well. That way other people can hear your thoughts and how you're responding to these ideas and to these concepts and to these conversations. And with that, it invites other people to join in on the conversation. I don't want it to just be the two of us having this conversation. Don't get me wrong. I definitely want to hear what you got to say. But I want others to hear what you have to say as well. It's that worthwhile, you feel me? So yeah, once again, please follow us on the socials, on your socials, share these episodes, maybe text a friend the link, and invite them in, leave that 5-star rating and leave a review. And I'll see you on the next episode of the Unapologetics Podcast. We're here. We're unapologetically Black, unapologetically Christian, and unapologetically crippled. No, I'm just kidding. Unapologetically having better conversations about this stuff with no apologies. I'm kidding. Like, we're not crippled out here. Like, no affiliation.